77. The Decision Taken. Chopping wood in the fresh morning air, Sir Logden reviewed his decision of the night before. Ideas unchallenged by a sleepy mind cannot always stand the light of day. He had lost count of the logs he had chopped, forgotten that he was swinging an axe. He was thinking. But the inconclusive debate with Reuben prevented him from thinking clearly. Arguments that would have floored Lev last night crowded his mind now that it was too late. But what vexed him, what galled him most, was the absurd turn the debate had taken. It was as if Reuben had won the right to judge Sir Logden's behaviour and, in particular, the step he must take today. He could delete Ljovka Rubin's name from the scroll of friendship, but could not strike out the challenge he had delivered. It lingered, and it rankled. It threatened to rob Sir Logden of credit for his invention. Yet, on the whole, the debate had been well worthwhile, as debate always is. Praise opens a safety valve, reduces internal tension, and so is always harmful to us. Whereas abuse, however unfair, serves as much-needed fuel for a man's boiler. All things in their prime have, of course, a hunger for life. Dmitri Sologdin, with his exceptional abilities, physical and mental, had a right to his harvest, his share of life's blessings. But he himself had said only yesterday that noble ends are attainable only by noble means. Sologdin had greeted that morning's announcement from the prison administration with a broad smile. It was yet another proof of his foresight. He himself had decided to break off his correspondence with his wife, and in good time. She would not be plagued by uncertainty. The hardening of the prison regime was simply the latest of many warnings that the whole situation would become grimmer and grimmer, and that no one would ever walk free just because he had done his time. The only way out was to earn remission. When the prisoners thronged the stairs at 9 a.m, Sir Logden was among the first. He went up to the design office, bold and bursting with health, fingering his blonde beard. "Here comes Count Sir Logden." His triumphantly shining eyes met Larissa's eager gaze. She had been yearning for him all night. What joy it was to have the right to sit by him and admire him, perhaps exchange a note with him. It was not the moment for that. Sir Logden averted his eyes as he bowed politely and immediately gave Yamina some work to do. She had to run down to the engineering workshops and find out how many of the bolts specified in Order 114 had been run off so far, and would she please be quick about it? Larissa looked at him, puzzled and anxious. She left the room. The grey morning gave so little light that overhead lamps were burning, and drawing-board lamps lit up one after another. Sir Logden unpinned the dirty sheet of paper covering his drawing-board, and the main circuit of his encoder met his eyes. 2 years of his life had gone into this work. 2 years of strict intellectual discipline. 2 years of the most productive morning hours. Nothing great is created later in the day. Had it all been for nothing? But should a man love such a bad country? This people estranged from God? A people that had committed so many crimes and shown no sign of remorse? Was this nation of slaves worthy of sacrificial victims? Geniuses who had laid their heads on the block unknown and unsung? For 100, for 200 years to come, this people would be content with its trough. Should the torchbearers of human thought be sacrificed for them? Was it not more important to preserve and hand on the torch? You could deal a still heavier blow later. He stood poring over his creation. He had only a few hours, perhaps only a few minutes, to solve the greatest problem he would ever face. He unpinned the main sheet. It flapped down like the sail of a frigate. One of the office girls was, as usual on Mondays, making the rounds of the designers, collecting unwanted drawings for destruction. Discarded sheets were not to be torn up and thrown in refuse bins, but burned out in the yard after official authorization. Was it lax of Major Sheikin to put his trust in fire? Surely a design office security operations office should have been set up alongside the design office, to monitor all drawings sent by the latter for destruction. Sir Logden picked up a soft copying pencil, drew several bold lines through his sketch, and scribbled over it. Then he unpinned it, tore a strip off it, laid the dirty cover sheet over it, slipped another piece of waste paper underneath, screwed the whole lot up, and handed it to the girl. "Here you are, 3 sheets." Then he sat down and pretended to be consulting a reference book while he kept half an eye on what became of his drawing. He wanted to see whether one of the other designers would come to look through the discarded sheets. But suddenly it was conference time. They all gathered around and sat down. The lieutenant colonel in charge of the design office remained seated and spoke perfunctorily about plan fulfillment, new plans, and reciprocal socialist obligations. He had included in the plan, without believing it for a minute, a promise to produce a technically sound design for an encoding machine by the end of the year, and was now qualifying this so as to allow his designers loopholes for a possible retreat. Sir Logden sat in the back row, serenely gazing past all those heads at the wall beyond. His face was smooth and unclouded, and no one would have supposed that he had something on his mind. He seemed simply to be using the meeting as an opportunity to take a rest. In reality, he was thinking furiously. Suddenly, he was stunned by the most obvious of misgivings. Maybe they'd been watching him closely since yesterday, when Anton had set eyes on that piece of paper. Perhaps the girls would be relieved of his encoder as soon as they got through the door with it. He writhed like a man impaled. He sat impatiently through the meeting and hurried over to the girls. They were already drawing up the list for signature. "I gave you 1 sheet by mistake," he said. "Sorry, here it is. This one." He carried it to his workplace and laid it face down on his desk. Larissa was not there. Nobody could see him. He took a large pair of scissors and quickly cut the drawing into 2 uneven pieces, then into 4, then cut each of the quarters into 4 again. That would be safest. Another oversight on the part of Major Sheikin. He should have made them do their drawings in books with numbered and stamped pages. Facing the corner with his back to the room, Sir Logden stuffed all 16 scraps of paper into the bosom of his baggy overalls. He always kept a box of matches in his desk. He left the design office, looking preoccupied, and turned from the main hallway into a side passage that led to the bathroom. The Zek, washing his hands under the tap in the first room, was Tunukin, a notorious stoolie. To the rear were the urinals and 4 stalls. The first was locked. Sir Logden tried the door. The 2 middle ones half open and unoccupied. The 4th door was closed, but it yielded to his hand. It had a good bolt. Sir Logden stepped inside, locked the door, and stood stock still. He took 2 pieces of paper from under his overalls, got his box of victory matches out, and waited. He could not strike a match yet, in case someone saw the flame reflected by the ceiling or smelled fumes spreading through the bathroom. Somebody else came in. Then both he and the occupant of the 1st stall went out. Sir Logden struck his match. The phosphorus flared up and shot onto his chest. At his 2nd try, the flame was too weak to get a hold on the twisted brown body of the match. It sputtered and went out in a miserable wisp of smoke. Sir Logden silently mouthed a few popular prison camp oaths. Non-flammable, incombustible matches. What other country could produce them? If you set out to make them, you couldn't. Victory. What victory could they ever have won? The 3rd match snapped between his fingers. The 4th was already broken when he took it from the box. The 5th had no phosphorus on the sides of the head. Sir Logden frantically pried out 7 matches and struck the whole bunch at once. They lit. He held the paper to the flame. The thick drawing paper did not burn readily. Sir Logden turned it so that the flame was at the bottom. It flared up and began to burn his fingers. He carefully placed the burning sheets in the toilet bowl, away from the water. Then took out a 2nd batch and lit it from the 1st, adjusting those so that they would burn completely. The black ash curled up and floated on the water like a little boat. The 2nd batch was ablaze by now. Sir Logden let go of it and put more sheets, then yet more, on top of it. The new bits smothered the flame, and pungent smoke rose from the smouldering mass. At that moment somebody came in and shut himself up in the stall two over, while the smoke was still rising. It could be a friend. It could equally well be an enemy. Perhaps the smoke would not get that far. But perhaps the other man had already noticed the smell of burning and was about to give the alarm. There was a tickling in Sologdin's throat, but he suppressed his cough. Then, suddenly, the whole mass of paper flared up, and a shaft of yellow light struck the ceiling. The heat of the flame was intense. It dried the sides of the toilet bowl and seemed likely to crack them. There were still two small pieces left, but Sologdin did not put them into the bowl. The fire was burning out. He flushed the toilet noisily. The water compressed the heap of black ash and carried it away. Sologdin waited, motionless. Two other people came in, just for a chat. All he thinks of is getting to heaven on somebody else's back. Just check it on the oscillograph, and never mind the rest. They left, but someone else immediately arrived and locked himself in. Sologdin stood there, humiliated by having to hide. He suddenly realized what was on the last scraps of paper. One was a corner piece, showing just the very edge of his drawing. Tearing off the bit that mattered, Sologdin threw the rest into the wastebasket. But the other piece contained the very heart of his design. He began very patiently tearing it into pieces so small that he could scarcely hold them between his fingernails. He flushed the toilet again and dashed out to the hallway under cover of the noise. Nobody had noticed him. Once in the main hallway, he slowed down. A wry thought occurred to him. You set fire to the ship of hope, and all you feel is fear that a toilet bowl may crack or that somebody may notice a smell of burning. He went back into the design office, listened absently to Yamina's news from the engineering shop, and asked her to hurry up with the copying. She didn't understand. How could she? He himself didn't understand yet. There was so much that was still unclear to him. Oblivious to the need to look busy, Sologdin did not touch his instrument case, his books, or his drawings. He sat with his head in his hands, eyes open but unseeing. Any minute now someone would come and summon him to the engineer colonel's office. He was, in fact, summoned, but to the lieutenant colonel. A complaint had arrived from the filter laboratory that they still hadn't received the drawing of two brackets they had ordered. The lieutenant colonel was not a harsh man. He only frowned and said, "Dmitri Alexandrovich, surely it can't be as complicated as all that. It was ordered on Thursday." Sologdin pulled himself together. "I'm sorry. I've nearly finished them. They'll be ready in an hour." He hadn't even begun. But it wouldn't do to admit that there had never been more than an hour's work in it.